Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Liveline. Colm O'Mungon here. You can get in touch on WhatsApp 087-484-8888. Text us on 51551 and, as you heard, 0818-715-815 for the calls. Geraldine Bird, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Colm. Hi. Pleasure to talk to you.
And lovely to talk to you too. Where were you when you saw the drone?
I was down in Doolin on the side of the harbour opposite the two piers, and you have to go through, you have to walk through a wall, so to speak, there is a gap, to get out actually on to the burn, onto the flat of the burn. And
you were on your own,
were
you?
Drone, well, I had my two dogs with me.
The two dogs, yeah. Go on, sorry.
I could hear the drone, first of all, above me, flying very high. And then it went off, disappeared, and then it came back flying much lower. And I'm not mad about drones anyway. But the dogs and I were on the way back to the car, so I went back and through the wall and over and popped the dogs in the car and approached the two young men that I thought must be flying the drone, because one of them had his head down and the other was looking up.
Right. And did when you heard the drone first, was it loud? How high up? Did you know it was a drone you were hearing?
Oh, yeah. And I could see it. It was very high, and it sounded, it still sounded like a mosquito, a big mosquito. As I say, it went off and then came back from the same direction, coming from behind me, from where the more wilderness of the Burren is, and flew over, but lower. Not dangerously low, but lower so that it was louder. And right. I could see clearly that it had kind of four legs and two things like water skis underneath and the size of it.
And could you give us, a rough estimation of how high you're talking about? As high as a two-story house, maybe higher than that again, as high as a flagpole, how high in the air was the drone?
Two-story house, probably.
Okay.
Second time it came. Yeah. Approximately. I'm not great at
sure.
Measuring things.
And so you saw that there were two men and one of them was hunched over. Did he have a visible remote control in his hand, or were they basically the only people about? Is that why you assumed they were in charge of directing it?
Oh, the place was pretty empty, yeah. And they were the only people around. There were very few cars. And, yes, because he was the pilot, if I can call him that, was...
No, that's the right word, yeah. That's bang on. That's the right word, all right, yeah.
Okay. He was facing towards me, but obviously with his head down, because he was looking at the little control panel, which was about the size of one of those. Do you remember Polaroid cameras?
I do. Yeah. For anyone too young to remember a Polaroid camera, they've made a comeback. They'd print out instant cameras. You'd be print out instant photos. I suppose you'd be looking at about the size a box about the size of two postcards, one on top of the other. Says he using postcards,
really
which nobody, yeah, yeah. But anyway, yeah. A small box, and there's sometimes a screen on them that shows you what the drone is flying over. So that's maybe why he was hunched over it.
Well, yes, yeah, there was. He was looking at the screen, and he was controlling it. So, that would be the responsible thing to do, to look at what he was doing.
And was it annoying the dogs? Did the dogs make any reaction to it?
No, they hardly looked up at all, and they were in the car by the time I went over to talk to the two young men.
Right, and what did you want to say to them?
Well, I'm always curious about drone flying, so I said, I'm curious, what is the enjoyment of flying drones? and the person who answered wasn't the pilot, it was his friend, and he explained that it was so that they could see places that otherwise they might not have be able to see. And there's a little island out called Crab Island, and he pointed out to that and said, like there, for instance. So at that point I said, well, it's flown over me twice, and, you know, I can do, well, I didn't say to him, I can't walk on water, but I said, are you filming, actually? Is that what you do? Do you want to take away the film of the place? And at that point, the pilot said, yeah. And I asked politely at this stage, would you please delete film of me with the dogs, because I like privacy, and to be honest, I don't like dogs very much.
Right.
He then gave a little swear, and it wasn't anything very serious, but it was a word that I knew what it meant. It wasn't in English, and the first young man who'd spoken to me had spoken with sort of broken English as well, good, but it wasn't his first language. So I said the word right back to him.
Right, we were not going to identify the country, but they were from a country that frequently holidays in the south and west of Ireland and have been well known for doing so for some decades. That's sufficient. And you recognised the language they were speaking. And you've picked up a bit of it yourself. And so you repeated this word back to him.
It's a very common swear word, yeah.
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 Manure, as a rough translation.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that escalated it a bit. You asked for your footage, the footage that had been taken to you, to be deleted. Insert foreign language word from manure here. Insert repeat of said word by you back to them. And where did it go from there?
Well, at that point, the pilot was annoyed by me coming over. Anyway, because I just think he was. And at that point, he said another word, and I had no idea what it meant. I'm not that fluent, and I looked it up afterwards. But his tone of voice, you know how much you can tell from somebody's tone of voice. And his tone of voice was dismissive, abrupt, unpleasant, and angry. And he then, as he was turning away from me, and again very abruptly, said, well, you better get away now, because it's coming back if you don't want your face to be on it, or you don't want to be on it more than you were. You know, I'm somewhat along those lines. And I pulled out his anorak sleeve to see if I could see the little screen and see what was on it. And then from behind me, I didn't realise there was anyone else in their car. There were two young women there.
Two tourists who were with them.
Two more tourists, yeah. There was four of them were travelling together. And one of the young women pushed the car door open and started shouting at me, I think because she'd seen me tugging at his sleeve. So she was protecting this big fella while she was sitting in the back of the car.
Now, don't do yourself any injustices here, but I mean, he's what? Is he over 6 foot, this fella?
I would say so, right. 6'1" or 2". I mean, not hugely tall.
Roughly.
5'7" or 8", I think.
Right.
And at my age, you start to shrink as well.
But you had drawn yourself up to your full height at this stage, all 5 foot seven, and you were remonstrating with them.
I was, and I had raised my voice to the young woman in the car who was shouting at me, because I was trying to explain, look, he's interfering with my privacy. I just want to delete the footage. This is, again, I can't remember my exact words, but, and I certainly was angry, but I wasn't swearing or calling them anything or threatening them, but I was cross.
And you were gesturing with your hands.
Well, I do anyway. My right hand is waving around a lot at the moment as I talk to you. But yes, my hands were waving in the air. And as I said, I had become loud.
It was a passionate performance, it's fair to say.
It was. The Burren to me is the be all and end all, really. And yeah. I know I don't own it, and thank goodness it's not private.
But this six foot odd gentleman, anyway, felt that the 5 foot seven lady of older years, who was giving a passionate performance at this point, he acted in a way that suggested he in some way felt physically threatened. He certainly physically interacted with you. What did he do?
Oh, come on, I didn't see it because he was behind me at that point. But what happened was that he bodily picked me up by my armpits inside my anorak and flung me onto the tarmac in the car park. So I went splat like a starfish about, I don't know, 3 or 4 feet away. So it was a good fling.
Thrown on your back, you hit the hard.
No, on my front.
On your front.
He picked me up from behind. You see.
I see. Yeah.
So he could only throw me forward, away from him.
Do you mind if we mention your age, Geraldine? Do you want to tell us, or would you prefer not to say?
I don't mind a bit. In a couple of weeks, I'll be 74.
All right. Well, happy birthday in advance. But that just gives the listener an indication of what we are now dealing with, which is asymmetrical warfare. He has picked you up and thrown you on your front onto the tarmac, and you've hit it with force.
It knocked the stuffing out of me. You know when your breath is, well, I don't know if you know, when your breath is knocked out of you and taking an in-breath is quite a struggle. And I was only down but not out for, you know, a second or two. But I had to struggle to stand up, because what he didn't know is that because of various injuries to ankles and wrists and shoulders and what have you, it's very awkward for me to stand up from a prone position. And I think a starfish would have made a better go of it. So it took me, you know, it took me maybe half a minute to actually stand up, because it really is a struggle. It's very ungainly.
And did anyone offer to help you? Having manhandled you to the ground, did any of the party of four offer to help you, or immediately express shock or regret or react in a way that suggested they disapproved of what he'd done?
No.
Right.
No, and they may have just gone straight back into the car. I wasn't looking around for them at that point. I was just fighting to stand up.
Did you check yourself for injuries? I mean, as you say, you sustained injuries before, and not, we should stress, in mortal combat with tourists, but you've sustained injuries. You're on the ground.
No, Conor presumably, McGregor here.
No, you're presumably checking yourself to see if there's any other injuries.
I didn't even think about that. I was just
too shocked.
Angry. And I was shocked. Angry, astonished, And when I stood up, I then realised, my mind was completely empty, actually. I was just busy standing. But my camera, my phone was in my pocket. And I thought, at that point, I actually had a thought that it would be a good idea to take a picture of their registration plate. And I did. And I walked around the car and I kept very, very close to the car because I didn't think they'd run me over, even though he'd got past my fear of flying. I really didn't think that young people would run over an old person. So I kind of hugged to the edge of the car.
In your telling of it, they've already crossed the line, so who knows? But anyway, you decided, you took photos of the reg. Did you take photos of them?
Well, I tried. That's why I was moving around the car. But they all put their sleeves up, elbows up. So they were covering their faces.
So we've gone from the ironic situation of you going up to them to remonstrate with them about being filmed and them telling you to basically being dismissive of your concerns to now them hunkered in a car with their hands and elbows over their faces to avoid being filmed themselves.
Yeah. It's sort of ironic, but just a tad.
And how did, I mean, once you were clear of the front of the car, did they speed off or drive off?
They drove off. There was no furious reversing and then zooming out of the car park. They just drove. But I did forget to tell you one thing, that the young man that I first spoke to, who explained about Crab Island and all that stuff and filming what they couldn't get.
Not the pilot, the other fella.
Not the pilot, the other man. When he saw that I was getting upset about being filmed, he said, "Oh, I'm very sorry, we didn't mean to upset you." So in retrospect, it's kind of surprising that he didn't try and pick me up, because he obviously has more than a shred of decency. Maybe the pilot, who had a gorgeous big bushy beard, I don't know, maybe he just said, "Look, let's get out of here." I imagine the atmosphere in the car was not easy and relaxed.
Right, that's the impression you got. Would consternation be fair?
Well, I couldn't see their faces, but right. You don't block off your face.
No, it's quite. But were there any other? Were there any other witnesses? Were there any other people witnessing this on around, or was it just you and the four in the car?
There were one or two other cars there, but I think they were empty, because it's a really popular spot for walking. You know, to start a walk across the burn.
Right.
And yeah, it was a lovely, clear day. You know, they had a great day for their filming.
Mm. It's about, I think it's about a 34-mile walk from there to Listoun. Onwards, up further up than Listoun, Varna. It's you're only at the halfway point if you're there. Majella Sheehan, good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you?
How are you doing? You're tuned in. You're listening with sympathy to Geraldine there, are you?
Of course. You couldn't be but sympathetic, you know. I'm sorry that happened to her. That's a horrible thing to happen, really. Yeah. But sadly, unfortunately, I have to make the point. She tugged at his sleeve first. You see, that triggered it, maybe. You can't do that. You can't physically lay hands on someone.
All right, sorry, Geraldine.
I beg your pardon?
He swore at me first, Michelle.
Yeah, but you see, even swearing at you, then you'd every right to swear back. But, you know, you're the one that you would be seen as the aggressor, in the sense that, and believe me now, I'm not justifying for one millisecond what happened. I'm not, because it's dreadful. It's absolutely appalling. But the very fact that you tugged at his sleeve, you see, you know, that might have triggered the whole thing. You can't really afford to lay hands on anyone, no matter what, no matter how annoyed you are, no matter what the situation is, really, because you don't know what you're dealing with. Do you know what I mean?
But the
and
reaction
it's not right
would,
anyway.
I mean, sleeve tug or no sleeve tug.
The reaction was appalling.
Yeah.
No, sorry. I would say no, you don't. The sleeve tug is important. It sounds minimal. It sounds silly, doesn't it? But at the same time, it is an act of okay, I'm not overstating it. It is an act of violence on someone else. And you can't do that, no matter how cross or upset or annoyed you are.
All right, well, we have to let Geraldine respond to that.
Of course, yeah.
It was a minor one-handed tug. I wasn't manipulating him or manoeuvring him. I wanted to have a look at the screen that he told me I would be on against my will. And he, by his tone of aggression, did escalate the situation.
And was the tug, the grab that was needed to execute the tug, did it include flesh or was it limited to fabric? And, you know, would you say it
fabric.
Was
fabric?
So just, and was it with the same force that you might use to attract somebody's attention on a bus if you needed help, say, or was it stronger than that?
I know, it was a, you know, how to measure a tug. It was just a tug and it was just the fabric.
Right.
Of his jacket.
Yeah, and that's fine and all, but it just, at the same time, you were the one that did it. You were the one that, you know, he didn't tug at you. He didn't push you away. I'm not, again, I have to keep repeating, it should not have escalated to that extent. But unfortunately, I just don't think, you know, it's a pity that it is a great pity that happened. That should never happen.
Even if he turned away in a different direction, Magella, and she just wanted his attention, you'd think that the tug was a step too far.
Use your voice. Yeah, I do, I'm afraid. Use your voice. Your vocal ability. Don't lay your hands on anyone, because when you do that, you don't know what number.
Using my vocal ability to the.
You were doing both. You were doing both. But I was responding
to him.
That's my take on it. That's my take on it. It's just that you can't physically.
I am very sorry. In a position of talking.
I will never lay my hands on anyone, no matter how much they annoy me. I will never, ever lay my hands on anyone.
Never is very
no
strong,
Magella. They annoy me. It is, but you know what? I've got to this stage of my life and I haven't done it. I've never, that's not something I would do. And it's just the way I am.
Right.
It's just the way. And to be honest, you know, again, as I repeat, I am very sorry it happened to her. But, you know, don't lay your hands on anyone in any anger or frustration or anything else. And you might avoid those kinds of things happening.
All right, Shay, good afternoon to you. Hello, Shay? Shay Burke, how are you doing?
How's it going? Listen, my sincere apologies to the old lady for what happened to her in relation to the man lifting her up or whatever he did. But I just wanted to say that, like, there's no expectation of privacy in public. If you're in a public area and there's cameras around, you're going to get filmed. So I just thought it was a bad move on her behalf by approaching him to take her off the film, because there's no way he has to do that. That's not a legal requirement, you know. There's cameras in every street in the country. You're walking down, you're filmed everywhere. So if that was the case, you'd be calling into every shop, take me off this video. I don't want to be on the CCTV, etc.
Are you a drone operator yourself?
I'm just recently after purchasing a drone, so I'm in the process of taking lessons. But I've done a course with the aviation authority online, but that's only basic, to tell you the truth. I have to go out first and do a proper hands-on approach to it, you know.
Right.
But that's the basic rules that they tell you, like, you know.
All right. Well, the legal, and you can, if you've done the course, maybe you know this, that under the Data Protection Act, using drones to take pictures or video as a recreational activity may be exempt from data protection law, but only if you don't publish the images or video to an unrestricted audience, as in, you know, for public broadcast.
Well,
is that your understanding of what your obligations are as a drone pilot?
Yeah, that's basically what it works. But I'd say it's more geared towards, you can't fly a drone over someone's back garden while they're sitting out the back sunbathing, things like that, or hovering around their windows, their bedroom windows. But in relation to flying over you know, the countryside and things like that, that you, landscape that you want to take photographs or video, and you happen to catch somebody from 50 metres high or 100 metres high, you know, they're only going to look like an ant in the film anyway. You know, you're not going to identify anybody.
But what if it's lower? Let's say somebody's on the witness protection programme and they fear for their safety, and a drone flies overhead and they can't divulge why they want to be deleted from the footage, but they want to be deleted from the footage. Should it not be negotiable at least that, you know, you can go to a drone operator and say, listen, I don't want to be in that film. If you could just get rid of that or refilm that scene when I'm gone.
Yeah, but you can ask anything, but at the end of the day, there's no expectation of privacy in public. If this fella that was on the witness protection programme was walking down O'Connell Street in Dublin, how many cameras is filming him? Many people is out there taking photographs of the spoiler or this or that or the other. It's going to be caught somewhere. And is he going to walk up to every individual person and say, listen, can you take me off your camera? I don't want to be on it. That's not logical, you know. That's not going to happen.
All right. Geraldine, for the record, is not in the witness protection programme. But Geraldine, what do you make of Shay's point there that, you know, it's drones are entitled to fly in a public place and, you know, that's CCTV footage exists. And that's the modern world we live in. You can expect to be filmed anywhere and everywhere except within the privacy of your own home.
Yeah, well, a couple of things. He wouldn't know somebody was sunbathing in their own garden unless he was flying a drone over them and spying on them. And another thing, one of the reasons I came to live in the West is not because I'm on a witness protection program, but because I do like privacy and I do like to be able to do things without... You know, it wouldn't occur to me that somebody would even want to take pictures of me. But if I then politely say to them, out in the wilderness, in the middle of nowhere, where there aren't any cameras, if I politely request that they delete just the footage with me in it, then I would expect a bit of cooperation. And yeah, I'm not sure if it would be legal to fly a drone over O'Connell Street.
No, it wouldn't be legal to fly a drone over O'Connell Street. It's a built-up area and there would be a lot of public people in place. But I'm talking about if you're walking down O'Connell Street in Dublin, there's probably about 5,000 CCTV cameras and people with a phone out taking photographs of each other and this, that and the other. That's how you'd be caught on camera. That's what I'm saying. It wasn't in relation to a drone flying down O'Connell Street. But listen, I apologise sincerely for the way... this situation ended up for you, and I can understand your concerns.
All right.
I can understand your concerns, but at the end of the day, anybody that has a drone is classed as a pilot. It'd be the same way if you went into the cockpit of an airplane and started pulling the sleeve of a pilot. It's the same thing.
Yes, I did give him that title, but I wouldn't dream of going into a cockpit of an aircraft, even if I were allowed.
Yeah, but this lad was piloting.
Tugging at a sleeve is hardly going to do him harm.
No, but you made the first contact. You could have pulled the drone out, the drone control out of his hand, and the drone could have dropped to the ground and crashed or hit somebody. Or, you know, that's the safety aspect of it.
Right.
There was no one around but us, and if he'd dropped the drone, then the question of deleting the footage would have been moot and I would have been perfectly happy.
All right, we'll give you the last word on that. Geraldine Shay and earlier Magella, thanks. We're back in a minute.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
All right, we're going to go all over the country in our next conversation. Alex Cleland, you run 3 supermarkets, one of them in Abbey Leaks. What are people robbing most?
Anything they can, to be totally honest with you. The biggest problem it happens during a recession it's quite rampant. Things are getting tight now, and people you have a certain element of people that will just steal. They don't care what harm they do to a business, what putting jobs at risk. They really, really don't care. All they want to do is just get something for nothing. And in some cases, you've got people that will travel around the country and they will steal to order. So someone will tell them what they want and they'll go out and find a shop they can steal it from and bring it back and sell it to them,
right,
whether it be for drugs or whatever it might be.
Give us the most recent example there.
Well, the woman, a girl came in at the weekend. She just literally straight into the shop, went round the shop, filled the bag, and went out. So she stole about approximately 50 euros worth of goods, just literally in and out of the shop within about 1.5 minutes.
A shopping bag.
She was in and gone. Yeah. Just an ordinary bag that you see anyone walking down the road with.
Straight in the door, didn't look left or right, went straight to X shelf, filled the bag, out the door.
Yeah. That's it. She went around 3 or 4 different shelves, threw stuff into it and straight out the door.
Right. Anything, you know, was it expensive stuff, meat, well, spirits, what kind of stuff?
It's groceries. It's groceries right. that she took. So the same person, then they're not necessarily, I won't mention anything about the person because that wouldn't be fair.
No, no, sure.
We're going to deal with that particular individual ourselves because she comes in quite frequently, but she won't be from now on.
Okay. And
but, it's quite common. I mean, we're no different than any other retailer in the country.
So what's the you're no stranger to this. I mean, how much would you be losing a year on this? That's one incident, 50 quid. I mean, you run three supermarkets, so what
between
would
between three stores, it could come to as much as 100,000 a year.
100,000 a year?
Theft. Yeah. It would, yeah. So it's quite considerable, and it doesn't matter what you do and how many staff you have and how well trained your staff are. If someone wants to steal, they're going to steal. And I don't want to mention any particular
group of people, but there's a certain
group of people in the country that do it, and they will come in, they will fill their dresses with them, and they'll come in groups. In fairness,
the Central Statistics Office shows that in the third quarter of 2024, theft offences rose by 5,006. 6 in 10 of them were shoplifting. So it's obviously pretty widespread and not limited to one particular group. Shane Gleeson, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
You run 5 shops.
Yeah, we've 5 shops in Limerick City, and we've the same experiences as the gentleman before you.
Alex, yeah.
In terms of loss, we know we were losing roughly 50,000 a year per shop on average, but one of the shops has gone particularly bad recently and has gone close enough to 100,000.
So, sorry, 50,000 per shop, and you have 5 Spar shops in Limerick. You're losing a quarter of a million a year.
Exactly, yeah.
To shoplifting.
Yeah. It's insane how much is going on. We've had an explosion of it in the last year. It seems to be particularly because there's no deterrence whatsoever. There's no actual real punishment. So the shoplifters were getting or hitting us again and again and again. They're barred, obviously, but they still sneak in. They try and follow in at a busy period. They'll try on new staff. They pay no attention to being barred whatsoever. We frequently have people arrested and back trying to rob within 2-3 hours again. Right. Well, it's a very common occurrence for us.
Anybody listening to the news last week would have heard that the prisons are overcrowded. There's, you know, 1.5 times occupancy in some prisons. You know, cells are doubling up. So, you know, that's
it's just the reality of the situation in the whole country. That I know shopkeepers in Galway and in Cork, and it's identical. We've the same trouble everywhere. But what's becoming more prevalent recently is the level of aggressiveness and self-righteousness. How dare you, can't stop me, you can't physically prevent me leaving the shop. And of course we do, because that's our livelihood walking out the door.
Yeah, what is the position business. On that? So for anyone, you know, listening, and Alex there, who we were talking to, mentioned it, that staff are provided with training. What is the right of a member of shop staff who suspects, based on observation or whatever else, that somebody... Yeah. is attempting to leave a premises without paying for goods?
Well, we're absolutely entitled to prevent them from leaving, and we do. We physically put ourselves between them and the door. We would position ourselves after the last pay point, so they've passed the tills and they're heading straight for the door, and we'll physically put ourselves in place of the door. So my son and my brother would be in the business with us, and we'd have staff that are well trained in it.
Now, and do you have to challenge them in a particular way? You know, do you say, I am stopping you because I believe you have stolen? Or, you know, how do you approach it? Do you have to be careful about what you say?
You have to be incredibly careful, because a lot of people now are pretending to steal in the shop so that you do challenge them so they can go for defamation case. And that's become a very common ploy in the last 12 months. It's another way of stealing from you. They literally put stuff in their pocket. They'll make sure you see them. They'll go around the back of the shop or in a corner, and they'll deposit the item into a shelf, head out the door with the pocket still pressed out open, so it looks full, hoping that you challenge them. So you've learned to be very careful to watch for those situations as well. But where we're 100% sure, we'll stop at the door and we'll ask for the stuff back. But in a lot of cases, it's very, very obvious. Like, as the man said, we've had people come in, and recently enough, one lady came in with an over-the-shoulder bag. She put 11 boxes of detergent in her bag.
What size of the bag was
it? Went out the door.
What size of a bag are you talking? Like a rucksack?
You know those big blue Aldi type of bags? Yeah. So they have the two arms of it over the shoulder, so the top of it can be open, so they can then slip the stock in, and it's not as obvious.
11 boxes of detergent powder?
11 boxes of detergent.
What size of a box are you talking?
They'd be the ones that's retailing at around 10, 11 euro. So it was a substantial amount going out the door. Now, in fairness, we didn't actually catch that lady. A policeman, or a guard, I should say, caught her downtown, spotted her with the bag. She's a well-known shoplifter. So immediately he challenged her and demanded to know where she got it. And, of course, she admitted to it immediately, and he returned the 11 boxes to us. She'd managed to come in during lunchtime, which was really busy. So we didn't spot her, and she got in and got out. And they're very good at being low-key, and you know, they're making sure they're not noticed when they get in.
But there must be, I mean, 11 boxes of what, I mean, she's, you know, not running a laundry, so people must be buying this offer.
Well, what the guard explained to me is that they're selling them door-to-door in certain areas, and they'll sell three for 20 euro, or three for a tenner, it depends how much they can get. And they're looking for enough money for the next hit of drugs. Our problem now would be primarily driven by a drug habit. So it's they're stealing to retail to get money for more drugs.
Right.
That's our biggest form of shoplifting. It's not the only one, but it's the biggest.
Okay. Dan Horan, you're in Tralee.
I am, Colm. Good afternoon to you. Colm, I have 21 shops, so I have a bit more. But thank God I don't have the issues that the previous contributors are after having. But, you know, I have a lot of my staff with me 15 to 20 years. And, you know, we're always training them and making them, tell them to be always observant. And, you know, they've got very good over the years of spotting people coming in that they feel are going to take something. And they'd watch them then while they're in the shop. But even at that, people are still very good at it. The new thing now is they take a bottle out of the box, but they leave the box behind. So it's harder to spot that they're after stealing something.
And what are they robbing from you, Dan? What do you sell and what are they robbing?
They'd be mostly supplements and multivitamins, and they sell for 35, 40 euros a box or a bottle. So they're very, very expensive. They're no interest in the cheap stuff. We sell cheap stuff for 2 or 3 euro, but it's only the expensive products like probiotics and that they're interested in stealing. But we've had to put a lot of that stuff now behind the counter, so people have to ask us for it, because it had become a massive issue for us.
And what do you reckon? Are they stealing it for themselves, or is there a market for people, you know, selling on these supplements?
I say sell it on. Columns call it sell it on. Maybe for themselves, maybe for the whole family. But sometimes I say sell it on the products as well, because it's easy enough to sell on sell on those products. There we see them sometimes advertised, you know, on Facebook and that. So it's easy enough to sell them on as well at a discounted price.
Right. If somebody can lift 11 boxes of detergent in a shoulder bag, they must be taking some supplements.
Well, it's much easier to take supplements because the bottles are very small. And as I said, they leave the box behind. So it's hard to spot that it's gone. And some people are very professional at what they do. And no matter how hard you get yourself trained and so on, watching for it, they're still able to do it. I say I'm very good at trying to sell stuff. They're very good at, you know, at stealing the products. But it's always a battle. Right. It has been for the last 25
years. How much are you losing a year on it?
I'd say between 10 and 20,000 a year, Colm. I wouldn't have the exact figure, but I'd say somewhere around maybe 20,000 a year. We try to build it into our margins. As I said, it's gone on for 35 years as long as I'm in business, so it has got worse, obviously, over the year.
Okay, but well, in three calls, we've got Alex, he's 100 grand down. Shane Gleeson is 250 grand. That's 350. And with you, it could be, you know, 365. Paul, how much, you're in Galway, Paul O'Brien. What? How much do you reckon you're losing a year?
Well, it's hard to measure. Like, we're just a newsagent. We sell smaller item stuff, but it's every day. I mean, and it's not just confined. You're having people from Limerick and Tralee. It's small towns like Tuam and Sligo. It's going on everywhere. And the people who are doing it, they're brazen. They're unafraid. They're oblivious to staff. They just nothing stops them. And it's not just picking stuff up. It's they also come in and, for example, they'll have a debit card and they'll tap with nothing on it, and they're gone. No, we've stopped that. We know how to stop that. Or they distract you. They come in big crowds. Or I mean, when your previous caller said it's a certain type of person, not our experience, it's every type of person.
How do you mean they tap and they're gone on the other thing? This is on self-service tills, is it?
Yeah, you don't know, we don't have a self-service till. You know, you tap your card,
yeah.
And you take that 4 or 5 seconds? Well, it happens, it doesn't happen anymore, but we don't release the goods. Someone might come in and ask for a pack of cigarettes, and they tap the card and they walk out. No, obviously we've copped onto that. We don't give them the pack of cigarettes until, but they still try to do it.
So this is every day somebody's in and a shop.
Every day, and it's evolved, Colm. It's not just shoplifting. It's people I caught an elderly woman last year, and she did it 2 weeks in a row. She came in on a Saturday, and she took the supplement out of the Irish Times and put it inside her Irish Independent and bought the Irish Independent. And I saw it, and then I saw her do it the following week, and then the next week I said, yeah, that's still shoplifting, no matter what. I said, and I didn't want to accuse her of that. I said, sorry, you accidentally put that in there, and she never came in again. I'm sure she's doing it in another shop since. There's tricks in every trade. I had another guy come in one day, and he asked for 3 packs of cigarettes, and I put them on the counter, and he said, oh, I need a lighter as well. What kind of lighter do you have? And I turned around for 5 seconds to go red, green, yellow, purple, blue, and he's gone. Now, I got my camera. I called the guards. Guards are excellent. They're understaffed. And then if someone gets arrested, you see them uptown an hour later. We have quite an elaborate CCTV system. I'm blessed with good staff who know to keep watching and don't give people an opportunity. But it's the brazenness. You know, they're just unafraid. I mean, the solution would be every time someone gets arrested and if they're found guilty, they're put into a prison. But you just have to say we don't have enough prison space. These people are released hours later.
And what do you mean? A lot of staff who are working there could be, you know, quite young people started out on minimum wage. Are they reluctant to confront people?
Of course they are. And sometimes I'd be intimidated by people myself. Like, I'm in my 50s, but I heard one of your other callers saying how they wait till they get to the door. Actually, they're all the landlords have to wait till they get outside the door. So, I mean, sometimes if you're in a supermarket like Dunn's or Aldi, you'll see someone with a regular shopping bag, instead of using a trolley, putting their stuff into a bag. You know, and there's no law against doing that. So if someone comes into our little shop, puts stuff into a bag, I mean, obviously it's been a little red flag. But what I nearly always say is I'll wait there actually physically outside the shop door, and I'll tap on the shoulder and I'll say, I think you've forgot to pay for something. There's always a slight chance I'm wrong, and then you're in trouble. But I've never been not wrong.
Right.
I'm always correct, and they come back in and embarrassed and. And it's all ages, all groups. There's no single type. As I say, elderly people, students, young people, everything, families, groups, everything.
Okay. Well, we're approaching €400,000 there between Shane, Dan, Paul, and Alex. Yeah. Thanks to you all. Thanks for calling in. We're back in a minute.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Colm O'Mungine here. Mike Gibson. Good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you?
How are you doing? You're from Kildare originally, but you're living in Spain.
I'm from Port Arlington, actually, yeah.
Oh, Port Arlington, all right. Apologies. Yeah. Apologies to Leash.
No,
set the scene for us in Spain there. What's going on?
So it's been about, I'd say, 3 hours now. Three or four hours. I know it was when the Wi-Fi was shut off, so I couldn't access my emails or anything, and everybody, all residents and all, are just kind of out in confusion, so... And the traffic lights are gone in town. They can't really access the internet. Phone.
What city are you in?
SOS mode as well.
Sorry, what city are you in, Mike?
I'm in Alicante.
You're in Alicante, right. So traffic lights gone, Wi-Fi down. Anything else? Have you been down the town to shops or anywhere else? What's the state of play there?
Only like the big chain shops are open, but they can't even close properly because they don't have any electric to close the doors. So, and obviously card machines are gone down as well. So it's a bit scary.
And people would be cash dependent or, you know, card dependent. They don't rely on cash really anymore at all, do they?
Yeah, especially today. Yeah.
And sometimes in an emergency situation, there'll be a general government alert sent out by text message on the phone, especially on the continent, you'd get it as a kind of a precaution on terror attacks and the like. Anything, any official communication across all mobile phones so far?
No, nothing yet. So it's kind of very limited internet access, so it'll kind of come and go. So I only, there about 20 minutes ago, was able to access an article and found out that they told people to limit their movements because the traffic lights and all are gone, and the metro station is down as well. So just to keep people safe, you know.
And so there's a statement there from the European Commission. They've been warning people in Spain and Portugal. They're trying to understand the cause of the blackout, says the European Commission. It says it's in contact with the Spanish and Portuguese authorities to understand the cause of a massive blackout. The Commission will keep monitoring the situation and make sure the smooth information exchange amongst the relevant parties. A spokesperson for the Commission said that electricity cut off across Spain, Portugal, briefly part of southwestern France in a blackout that hit millions of people, grid operators said. You know, that's across obviously several countries. Have you been talking to people? What's the atmosphere like in the street there? Are people, is it kind of consternation, or people just going about their business?
Just pure confusion from everybody, because we're all in the same situation, because a lot of people can't access the internet, and obviously we rely on that for news as well, other than newspaper. So just confusion with a lot of people.
And would it be a city with a lot of kind of high rises and that, where lifts would be needed?
Yeah, so there's a lot of apartments around here, so they would rely on elevators as well. So I'd imagine that they'd be down as well. So,
How long have you been living there, Mike?
I'm here about a month now, I'd say. But there's only ever been short power outages, but never this widespread and for this long.
All right, so, you've had them before, have you?
Yeah, just small ones in the area, but never just widespread. I was shocked to hear how widespread it was.
And is it affecting airports and travel into the country and the like?
Yeah, my sister is actually supposed to be flying out to me tomorrow, so we're unsure when it's going to return. And I know a lot of flights have been cancelled because they don't have any internet or electricity in the airports, so a lot of the flights are affected.
Right, the Spanish grid chief apparently saying that never, this is a quote, never in history have we had such a widespread outage as this.
Yeah.
And have you got any indication as to how long this is going to last?
No, it's just confusion with everybody. And I went downtown myself just to see if there was any updates in shops or anything, and everybody is just confused. So it's just confusion, a bit of chaos right there.
And sorry if I missed it there. What time did this all start at? When did you first become aware of it?
So it was around 4 hours ago, I believe. 4.5 hours ago now. But, it's the daytime now and it's beautiful weather here as well. So, if it comes to nighttime, it's a bit more noticeable, I suppose.
And are you dependent on a lift yourself? Like, you know, for getting up and down in the building or anything?
No, I live on a boat actually myself.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, so it's can't really complain too much. I can just sit out in the sun and enjoy it, and hopefully it comes back soon.
Right, how'd you end up living on a boat?
I don't even know.
Right, and just, what are you doing over there?
My partner is from Spain, so I just moved over there last month just to travel and have the experience of living here. I'm self-employed as well as an artist, so I can work from home, so I'm not too affected by the power outage at the moment.
So what kind of platform? What's your, are you a photographer, a painter, what sculpture, what do you do?
I work, my medium would be pencil, and I do portrait work.
And do you do it for tourists around the area?
No, so I do several different musicians, kind of realism, and I sell prints of my work through my website, so I don't have access to that today because of the outage, but it'd be mostly musicians and stuff like that.
Okay. All right, well, look, thanks for taking our call. Hopefully it'll be restored soon, but at the moment been treated as an emergency anyway, and it's very widespread. We're back in a minute. Carolina Barela, thanks for calling us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're not having the same luck contacting your family in Portugal, is it?
No,
Yes, I don't have contacts from them, but I think they are at least avoiding using batteries from their phones.
And what do you understand the situation to be then in Portugal? What services are down?
So the gas stations are all down. Electricity is completely cut off, so services are down. I think that hospitals and other services, they have generators. They were able to continue their work, but authorities are telling people to avoid going out and take their cars, to let emergency technicians to try to work on the getting electricity back on. Also, there's some news about the water supplies. There might be interruptions from water supplies during the afternoon. So it's a complete chaos.
And where are your parents at the moment? Where's your family? Sorry.
My family is in Lisbon area.
And where specifically are they at home? Do you know, or do you even know where they are? Seeing as you're trying to get in contact with them.
They were at home in the beginning. So in the early morning they were at home. They had no plans to go out. But since we have an elderly family member, my grandmother is living all by herself. She has no social media, so no contact other than landline. My mother was going to visit her, but I don't have any news from her.
Okay. And some of your family are stuck at a petrol station, are they? Apologies, because your line is just a bit weak, Carolina, but your in-laws, is it? Your in-laws are stuck at a petrol station.
My in-laws are traveling from Spain to Portugal, and they stopped in a gas station nearby the border between Portugal and Spain, and there's no gas.
Because of the power outage.
Pump's
not working.
Exactly.
Okay, unfortunately, Carolina, your line is going down. Best of luck with contacting your family, and hopefully your in-laws will get out of that petrol station soon. Darren Lowry, good afternoon to you.
How are you?
Just a couple of minutes left, Darren. You're working as a security guard in a shop in Wexford, is it?
Yeah. That's it.
You were listening to Alex and the other callers earlier talking about shoplifting. Yeah. What's your experience?
It's just gone out of control. Sort of since the new year has been gone out of control. Every day it's going on. And the problem is just the law. There's no law against it. There's people robbing, they're not even going to court. They're back in the next day or that evening.
Right. Well, there is a law against it. It's just not stopping them.
I don't mean there's no law. I meant it's not strong enough.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't own the business, but I feel sorry for shop owners. The much money they're losing, like, and obviously some shops don't have security or whatever. It costs a lot. Like,
and are you catching them in the act, or are you stopping them trying to leave, or have you got to the point where there's just people barred from the shop?
I've caught people recently that you ask people to come back in, and they come back in, and there's other people with them outside, and they know you're going to be held up in an office, and then they'll come in and do the same thing. That's how bad it's gone.
Right. So it's worth one person getting caught so other people can do some robbing.
Yeah, the same gang will be outside, and they see that One member of the gang had come in with you and sit in the office and wait for a guard to come, and then the other three outside, no one would be on the floor, and okay, to come in and clean out the place.
All right, Darren, I'm sorry we're out of time there, but thanks for ringing in with that and sharing your experience with us. That's
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Patricia McGurk, you're a CIE pensioner. Following on from calls as well we had last week, there's about 2,200 people in the same predicament as you. Just for listeners who didn't hear that, tell us what your situation is.
Hello, Colin. Thank you for taking the call.
You're very welcome. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you. Well, I worked for CIE from 1969 until 2010. I had a little over 41 years working with them. And I am on pension since 2010. And since then, we have not had an increase at all in our pension. And I had a varied career with CIE. I worked with CIE Tours, which was very interesting, organising tours and conferences. And then that was for 20 years. And then I went on to work for CIE Property, which was also very exciting. And we in CIE paid a Class D stamp while we were working. So we got no benefits, really, that you would get from an ordinary A type. And so we don't get a social welfare pension. and I have a CIE pension now, which is half of my finishing salary at CIE. So there were just a few, we paid into this pension, we paid 5 or 6%, depending on your age, of your pay into the pension fund. And so we're in that predicament now.
And so you retired in 2010, and since 2008, the situation has been that there have been no increases on the pensions for retirees.
That's correct. Now, there was what we call the economic crash, and all pensions increases were halted, as were the active staff in CIE. They got no pay rises either. But in 2016, the salaries were increased, but not the pensions. So what the pensioners are worried about now, well, we're not worried about it, we're actually furious about it, because in that length of time, state pensions have increased by about 24%. The cost of living has gone up about 22%. And now we figure out that active staff have about 30% of a rise, and we have got zilch. And again, we have all the outgoings that we would have, that I had in 2010, which are now increased by 24%. So it makes it all very, very difficult, really.
And you pay USC on this pension that you get?
I pay USC, and like pensioners on the social welfare pension do not pay USC. That is another thing that sort of rankles as well. I had just retired when the USC had came in, and that was supposed to be just for a temporary thing, but now it is a permanent fixture, and we pay that on our pension.
And your husband's in the same boat, is he?
He is. He is in the same boat, yes.
Did you meet? You met in CIE, did you?
I met him in CIE.
And is this
a
when
lucky
you
man.
Is this when you were working in CIE Tours? Because it was a pretty glamorous profession, wasn't it, CIE Tours?
It was very, very. I have to say, I really loved my time there. And we organised tours, conferences, all sorts of things like that for American visitors and people all over the world.
I remember I used to work as a tour guide in Dublin Castle. I remember the CIE bus pulling up. There was one man, Bill Beasley, who was, God rest him, he was very knowledgeable. Yeah, and another woman, Maura, used to come in, and they always came in and swept through with great elan with the American tourists, and the tourists all seemed very happy. Being looked after by them. So you were in the same line.
I was in the office actually organising, starting off sort of, I would have travel agents from the States contacting me. They were saying, we want to bring X amount of people to Ireland. I'd plan an itinerary for them, book it all up, arrange the whole thing, make sure everything went well, get coaches and drivers and all sorts of things for them.
Right.
But it was fascinating. It was fascinating.
Anyway, the situation is that you paid into this pension and you did your time, and you've come out at the end, and your main issue with this is that other pensioners, like those on the state pension, have got increases over time. CIE employees have got increases over time, and your pension has remained static as the cost of living has climbed.
That's it. We are in a thing called the 1951 CIE superannuation scheme. And now, it's not that we haven't been fighting. I have written to every member of the board of CIE. I have written to the Minister for Transport, the Minister, whatever Pascal O'Donoghue's office was in those days.
He's
sort of seeking an increase, and they have told me sort of their no, no is the word.
Just for listeners, we did put into the Department of Transport, which would have been over CIE for a response. They said that the pension scheme is primarily a matter for the trustees of the pension scheme. And they say that it's a matter also for the board of CIE, and any pension related matters is a matter, should I say, for the Department of Social Protection. And they say the Department of Social Protection sent us an explanatory note on the pension schemes A, B, C and D, but they say there are no plans at this stage to change the rules that apply across these PRSI classes in terms of your entitlements and benefits.
Gosh, thank you for doing that, Colm. That's marvellous. But, I mean, that's where we're in this quandary, in that nobody seems to care that pensioners who retired are now on a basic 2010 salary.
All right. Stay with us, Patricia. Bernie Tierney, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Colm. How are you?
You're another former CIE employee. Are you in the same boat as Patricia?
I am, yeah. And I've spoken to Patricia before. I know Patricia.
You know quite a deal about this. You are, to give you your full title, the executive in charge. You were once the executive in charge of the pensions office when you retired.
I was, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I was. So I 25 years working at the pensions. So the reason then that I got in touch with the programme after the programme on Friday was that some of our members had spoken to you, and I felt that I wanted to send in an email then and give my point of view, probably more the way that we're working and that we have worked since 2016. But as Patricia has referred to it, like, we've written numerous letters and we've to the board of CIE and the Minister for Transport from 2016, and we continue to do so. But in all of that, we have never had an opportunity to meet with any of the ministers for transport at all, like Shane Ross or Eamon Ryan or now Darrell O'Brien.
Darrell O'Brien. Darrell O'Brien. Sorry, Darrell O'brien, the comedian. Although, yeah. You found their responses less than funny to date, it would be fair to say.
Exactly.
And the Liveline team got a number of responses there. As I say, they say the Department of Transport says that decisions regarding pension increases are ultimately a matter for the CIE board. The procedure of many commercial semi-state body pension scheme, including that of CIE, is not... It is not the minister who grants increases. And the position of the CIE chairman, Aidan Murphy, last year in November, he told Eamon Ryan that the schemes had, the pension schemes of CIE, had a deficit of 371 million at the end of last year. And sources told the Irish Times for that particular article that they have pension liabilities of about 2.7 billion. Do those figures sound familiar?
Well, they sound very, very familiar, but I'm coming from the point, from the sort of the members, where they stand. And, like, they paid their money for the 40 years, and there was always the staff salaries were reflected then in the pensions. They called it parity, and they... When the staff got an increase, then the next July, the pensioners got an increase. Now, the pensioners have done everything. They've done nothing wrong. They've paid in all through their careers. And it's just what strikes me, what's getting me, is kind of the sadness of the whole thing, that everybody, like, that has paid in, they're struggling. Like, with the cost of food and gas and ESB, like, the weekly shopping is going up every week. There's people now that I've heard that have heart conditions and they need the heat on in the house. They can't have the heat on in the house. It's costing them too much.
And would you know anecdotally, Bernie, what the lowest weekly pension to a member of CIE staff that you've heard of anecdotally from amongst the 2,200? Well, what kind of a figure would you be talking about?
Well, I do have figures, actually, for the very elderly pensioners. There's 51 female pensioners, and their average pension is €1,079.51, and that's below the state pension.
That's per month, is it?
Per month. And then there are 197 male pensioners, and their average pension is €2,025.13. Now, those maybe the females are in a single household, so they have to pay all their bills themselves and have no help with it. And then in the other case of the males, it could be a husband and wife, that's depending on that money, and no state pension coming in or anything. It seems like you say, anecdotally, there's a lot of families being helped by their children or by their sisters or other family members, but they just can't manage their bills at all. And it's so sad. We'd say 51 female pensioners that maybe they're over 80, maybe they're 85, and like that they're not being provided for in their very, very old age. I did hear of one case where a lady's in a nursing home, and by the time she pays the Fair Deal and everything, her average monthly, what would you call it, the money that's left after all the bills are paid is €90 per month. And sometimes
per
it
month.
Isn't even that per month. And her sister and her niece, they're constantly taking care of her for her personal needs, like toiletries, clothing, maybe going to the dentist, because they can't have her waiting on a waiting list to go to the dentist. They have to pay for her to go to the dentist. Now, that's one particular case. So, but there are a lot more.
So the state non-contributory pension is about €266 a week. And you've got former CIE employees who are on €219 a week, in some cases, by the figure offered there. But sorry, you mentioned there women are particularly affected by this in a lot of cases, are they, amongst that cohort?
I suppose the fact that they're single income households, and maybe that they have never married, so they don't have children, and so they're kind of solely on their own.
And do you mean, single income households, these are women who may have had jobs in CIE and didn't want, you know, because of the marriage bar, stayed in employment, didn't get married, and are single income employees now?
They were single when they retired.
Right.
Yeah. And of course, that has changed now, but from a lot of emails that were coming in, I got a long list of people who are struggling. And just one person said it would be easier to name pensioners.
Don't give us any information that would identify them.
No information. This is only words.
Yeah.
It would be easier to name pensioners that are not at their wit's end. And I thought that was very apt for their situation.
As you say, you've lobbied various politicians of it. I mean, the traditional method of, I suppose, politicians looking for answers on this would be to be table written questions or questions to the minister in the Dáil. Has there been any follow up on that you know of, and any satisfactory answers?
Well, we've got the answers to the parliamentary questions, but actually, what you've read out earlier from the Department of Transport is exactly what we get. And that it's finally in the hands of the Minister for Transport and the Board of CIE to grant an increase. It's a discretionary increase. Like, it's at the discretion of the Board to grant an increase.
The Department of Transport does say that based on the current position of the pension scheme, the scheme actuary is of the opinion that a pension increase is not currently affordable and the annual pension increases would not be sustainable into the future.
Well, it's on the other side of the coin, the accounts in 2023, the scheme is fully funded. They meet the statutory requirements of the Pensions Authority.
Okay.
So I think there are two different sides, but I would be on the trying to get justice for pensioners. And maybe, okay, if the money isn't in CIE, maybe it's time after 17 years for some help with the pension fund. There was money put into RTE there a while ago, and there were other pension funds that were helped out along the way.
Okay. Thanks, Bernie. Thanks, Patricia. We're back in a minute.